started again. Now we only have one final topic, and that's the modulation of signals. And as I mentioned before, we're not going to look at every possible modulation technique, although we will run through quite a few of the basics today. And so the main thing of interest for us today is, well, one is, again, some idea of what the possibilities are, but then to examine how the bit energy, the bandwidth deficiency, and the bit error rate all sort of interact with each other in the context of a modulation scheme.
Sorry, I was just a bit worried about my recording. It seems to be going. Crumpets. Come on. E2. Okay. Whoops. Sorry about this, I was worried about the recording. I think it's going though. So we'll just go up to where we were. Okay.
So we have our bits now, and we need to come up with some sort of sinusoidal representation of the bits, which can then be transmitted physically over a distance, in our case, as a radio signal. Okay. So, obviously, at the very least, we need to be able to distinguish between two bits, a 0 and a 1. And we do this by altering some parameter of this sinusoidal signal. And again, we have three choices: the amplitude, the phase, and the frequency. Okay. And so once we have made this choice, or potentially impacting on the choice that we make, is this, again, this concept of interchange between the amount of power we have to put into sending the bit, the spectral efficiency that we wish to get out of the system, and the bit error rate that we wish to get out of the system. Okay, so we're transmitting this sine wave, and it's transmitted at a single frequency tone, and that's known as the carrier, and that has to be in the acceptable range of frequencies. And so, again, we then get a signal which has some amplitude, a frequency, and a phase. In order to distinguish bits, well, we have to change one of the three things we can change: the amplitude, frequency, or phase. Okay. at its simplest, we think about transmitting a single bit per change, or distinguish or a bit at a time being distinguished by these changes. And but it may be the case that we can represent multiple bits through a single change. Okay. And so in this case, we have to distinguish between the signaling rate or baud rate, and that's just the rate at which these changes are occurring. So if you're changing phase, the baud rate tells you how frequently you change the phase. If you're changing frequency, how frequently are you changing the frequency? Okay. Now, depending on how many bits are represented by that change, the bit rate that you achieve can be different than the signaling rate. So as an example, if you have 2 bits for every change, then obviously your bit rate is going to be twice the signaling rate. So you can squeeze in 2 bits every time. Okay, so what we're going to do is just go through and look at our systems that, you know, again, change these basic parameters. We'll make some comments on them, and then we'll look at performance issues. Just to note, spread spectrum modulation is essentially a more complicated way of representing bits, which is more noise resistant. So it would fall into these modulation techniques, but again, it's worth having addressing it sort of on its own as a topic. So we'll get to that later in the module. Orthogonal frequency division modulation, again, we'll discuss later in the module, again, in the appropriate context. So these are just the basic schemes that you would have seen in any sort of signaling course. Okay, so the first thing you could think about changing is the amplitude. So you can either having an amplitude corresponds to a bit and zero corresponds to another bit, or maybe plus minus corresponds to the zero and ones. Okay. This system is fairly susceptible to attenuation and is rarely used in wireless systems. So, you know, I mention it because, again, you can change all these things, but we're not really going to consider it. Okay, so our second option is to change our frequency. And typically, in this case, what we have is we have our carrier frequency, and we shift either up or down from that carrier frequency to represent our 0 and 1 bits. This is commonly used in high frequency radio transmissions, 3 to 30 megahertz. We can extend that concept again and represent multiple bits per frequency shift. And obviously, for L bits, we're going to need 2 to the L separate signals. And so we'll have to have 2 to the L frequency changes. Excuse me. Okay, and so Our formula here pins that down. So we have our I in between 1 and M. So it's the number of different signals we need to represent our log M number of bits. And so we can assign those frequencies as possible. We have our carrier frequency. We have a difference amount, so a difference frequency, and that's the difference frequency will govern how far apart the signals are on the frequency spectrum. And then we form the 2i minus 1 minus m times fd to give you your specific frequency shifts. And so in our example, L is 2, M is 4, and so we have our 4 separate frequencies, and each shift then represents a pair of bits. Okay. So we start out with 0, 0, which is S, which is I 0, and we get FC minus 3 FD for that. And we then 1 1 gets to the top of our frequency range, 1 0, 1 1, 0 1, etc. Okay, so again, the only thing sort of interesting about this is that we can represent multiple bits, and of course we need the appropriate number of chain of distinguishable signals in order to do that. Okay. The final aspect that we can change is the phase of our signal. And so phase shift keying does just that. It changes the phase. And there's a number of flavors of phase shift keying. Your standard is to use two fixed signals with a 180 degree phase difference between them. And you need relatively complex demodulation circuitry to recover the phase out of that. Differential phase shift keying uses a phase shift of 90 degrees relative to the current signal to represents a binary 0, and 270 to represent a binary 1. So again, here, each one is represented sort of in isolation. Here, you're depending on what the previous signal was to recover the current signal. Okay, and again, things I don't particularly find terribly interesting, except it's simpler to demodulate this sort of scheme. Okay, so this is just a simple example of phase shift keying, differential phase shift keying. So what we see, and we have our basic carrier, so our basic frequency. And for phase shift keying, then we're just flipping the signal. So we have a phase and then 180 degrees out of phase. Okay. And in the case of differential phase shift keying, again, the change is now relative to the current signal. So again, for a 0, we shift by 90 degrees, and a 1, we shift by 270. And so here we take this signal, and then for the representing the 1, so that's our initial signal. Then the next signal, again, is going to be shifted 90 degrees. So shifting is back by 90 degrees. Now, the one is shifted relative, again, to the previous signal, and so either back by 270 or you can think this forward by 90. Okay, another one, and again, the shift occurs relative to the previous position of the signaling. Again, it's possible to represent multiple bits by just having more different phases. Okay. So if you want to represent two bits, then you need to have four distinctions and four phases. Okay. Now there's, again, a number of ways of implementing this sort of a QPSK system, so a four phase shift keying system. And so our example here gives us a flavor of that. And so the way the shifts are implemented is we divide our bit stream into two streams representing the alternating bits of data, and so we have what's called the in-phase stream, so our base stream, and then alternately you have your quadrature phase stream. Okay. And so, to some extent, just as a side note, it might help to think of this in the complex plane. And so, we have our in-phase streams, and they represent our cosines. So they're going to be on our what's called the x-axis. Then we have our out-of-phase streams. They're going to be on the y-axis. Add them up, and well, you'll end up with points at these 45 degree angles, right? Okay. And so for our basic QPSK scheme, what we see is that at any point, both of the elements, the in phase and the quadrature phase elements can change. And that means that you can go up to a difference of 180 degrees in your phase. Okay. Now, there's nothing particularly wrong with that, except it tends to be, you know, again, it's more complicated to detect these changes, and more, and the bigger the phase change, the more prone to error the system can be. Okay. So as an improvement on that, we have what's called offset QPSK, and for offset QPSK, one of the data streams is delayed, or the Q stream, the quadrature stream, is delayed by a bit time. And what that means essentially is that now only one of those elements is changing in time. Either the I stream changes or the few stream changes, and therefore, again, if you look at the phasor picture, you can see that the change in the phase can be at most now 90 degrees. Okay. And so, again, this is easier to achieve and better, has better error resistance. Okay. And so this is just an example of this sort of system. And so we have our input system. And again, we divide this up into two streams, our in-phase and our quadrature stream, which again represents every other bit. And so for QPSK, then the change occurs sort of every two bits, relative to the initial stream, and can have the 180 degree phase changes. With OQPSK, again, we will have shifted our Q stream, and what you can see there then is that the changes occur now every bit time, potentially every bit time you have the change, and the degree of the change is at most 90 degrees or pi over 4. Okay. So, again, it's one of the basic modulation schemes. Now, there are a number of variations of these basic schemes. One that's found in some mobile systems is what's called minimum shift keying. And the idea with it, minimum shift keying, is it's a frequency shift keying scheme, and the idea is to minimize the difference between the frequencies needed. Okay. And we'll just won't worry about that last point. Another scheme that's found in some wireless standards, but again will not be too interesting for us, is what's called quadrature amplitude modulation. And here, in quadrature amplitude modulation, both phase and frequency can change. Okay. And so, since you're changing two elements, you can represent two bits per change. Okay. And so, you can imagine sort of any number of variations on all these, changing multiple amplitudes and multiple phases, etc., and potentially they can be used. Again, I'm not going to dwell on any of these techniques overly much because, again, what we're going to see is that there's a number of techniques which are used specifically in the context of wireless systems, including spread spectrum and orthogonal frequency division multiplexing. And these we'll concentrate on the details of those instead. But, again, be aware that these exist. They are sort of the basics. when we discussed the others, you know, understanding of these will help anyway. And again, what's interesting for us to examine today is how these relate to performance. And it gives us a sort of concrete context in which to examine the issues of performance in these in the data transmission. And specifically, what we're going to look at again are these three quantities. We have our bit error rate, so what's the error rate in the system? We have bandwidth efficiency, so how many bits can we pack into a given bandwidth? And we have our bit energy to noise, the density ratio, sort of very specifically the bit energy. So how much power do we have to pump in to achieve either bandwidth efficiency or loss rates? And so, you know, again, we'll see that the three are interrelated. Okay. And so, for all of our basic schemes, what we're going to see is that we're going to assert without proof that we can relate the bandwidth to the bit rate. Okay. And how exactly it's related depends on what scheme you're using. And in each case, we have this factor R, which relates to the properties of the filter used. And depending on, again, how cleverly you implement the scheme, you can get and you can achieve better bandwidth efficiencies even within a single scheme. Okay. And so, in case of amplitude shift keying, you have a basic formula, which is BT is 1 plus R times our bit rate. Now, for our phase and frequency shift keying results, the result is going to be dependent not just on our filtration techniques, but also on our levels. So how many levels do we have per signal? Okay, and again, level indicates how many bits you're packing into a specific signal. Okay. And what we're interested in and what this gives us then is a relationship between our bit rate and the bandwidth we're taking to do the transmission, which is called the bandwidth efficiency. And so again, ideally what we'd like is to either for a fixed bandwidth increase the rate at which we can send the bits, or for a fixed rate decrease the bandwidth at which we can that we need to take to send the bits. Okay, so this table just represents those formulas done out for a fixed number of values for R between 0 and 1. So R equals 0, R equals 1/2, and R equals 1. And so, again, We have R over BT for this, and what we'd like is, you know, the higher the ratio, the better. Although, again, we see that there is, there may be a limit to what ratio we can achieve. Okay. And the one interesting result is that for frequency shift keying, the bandwidth efficiency decreases with the number of levels. For phase shift keying, bandwidth efficiency actually increases with the number of levels. So the more levels, the better. Unfortunately, you do run into some practical issues about, you know, exactly how many can you ultimately distinguish using any sort of hardware. So you can't keep that going forever. Okay. So that gave us some look at bandwidth efficiency versus modulation scheme. The bit error rate relative to the amount of energy we put into our transmission is also dependent on the modulation scheme that you use. Okay. And so we see that in this graph. So we have our bit error rate on one axis and our bit energy to noise density ratio on the other axis. And what we see is that we get better or worse performance depending on what sort of system we use, what sort of modulation technique we use. And so these techniques distinguish between our single bit representations. We can also look at these results for both frequency shift keying and phase shift keying. And in these cases, we see that the results are also dependent on the number of levels. And here for frequency shift keying, if you fix, for instance, an error rate, the more levels you have, the less, relatively less energy you have to put into the system, whereas in contrast, for the same fixed rate with phase shift keying, the more levels you have, the more energy you have to put into the system, or put into the transmission of a bit. And so again, we can contrast that to the bandwidth efficiency results we got. So again, there's a trade-off going on depending on which scheme you use. Okay, so we can have a look at, again, just the trade-off that's going on between these various components. And we've taken a couple of sample problems to try and illustrate these concepts. Okay, so in this first problem, we've fixed our bit error rate, and we have a fixed signal-to-noise ratio. And the question then is, what's the required bandwidth efficiency? And, you know, we'll look at this in the context of our different modulation schemes, because the answer is going to vary depending on which modulation scheme we use. Okay. So, we know our signal-to-noise ratio, and we know that there's a relationship between bit energy to noise density and signal-to-noise ratio times divided by bandwidth efficiency. Okay. And so one thing I didn't point out, but if you were reading the graphs and the keys on the graph carefully, these results are decibel results. So the way the graph has been plotted. So in order to get to any to deal with those graphs, we need to convert our equations to decibels. And so we have bit energy to noise density ratio in decibels, or signal to noise ratio in decibels, and then just take 10 log 10 of BT over R. Again, what we're interested in is the bandwidth efficiency, or R over BT. So to change the numerator and denominator, you just pull out a minus. Okay. So what we're looking for now is, first of all, what bit energy to noise ratio do we need to achieve a certain bit error rate? Okay. And so once, and we can look that up on our graphs. Once we have that, comparing that to the signal-to-noise ratio, which we've said is fixed, will give us our bandwidth, the required bandwidth efficiency. Okay. And so we have our bit error rate was 10 to the minus 7. And so we can look up what bit energy to noise density ratio we need for each of our signaling schemes. Okay, so we have our bit error is rates 10 to minus 7, so we're just down at the bottom of this curve here. And so we get various values for FSK and ASK is 14.2, for PSK it's 11.2. So again, we can see that here's the 14.2 for asking the FSK. Here's the 11.2 for BPSK. Okay. So, where does that get us? Well, we have our EV around 0, we have our signal-to-noise ratio, and comparing those two, we get our bandwidth efficiency, again in decibels, which we can translate out of decibels into just a value. Okay. And so, similarly, we can compare the 11.212, the 0.8 dB, and band then, translating that then out of the band, out of the decibels, we get a value. Okay. Now, for QPSK, the signaling rate is doubled, so you also need to double the bandwidth efficiency. Okay, so I'll leave you just with one question for that, and that is, are these bandwidth efficiencies achievable? And again, to see sort of a range of achievable results, we go back to our table here. And so I'll leave you to make your own conclusions about that. Okay. Now, in our second problem, we're going to look at now just the relationship between the bit error rate and the bandwidth efficiency, and finally see again how that sort of factors in with the signal-to-noise ratio that, you know, that would be required, okay? So here we fixed our bit energy-to-noise density ratio, and again at a decibel value. And so we can look now at the bit error rate. Then we will examine the modulation schemes for the bandwidth efficiency and again see how they interplay. Okay, so we fixed our EB over N0 at 10. So we're moving up the scale now, and we can look at the bit error rates depending on the modulation scheme used. So if you look at the FSK, you have, you know, roughly 0.5 times 10 to the minus 7 here, maybe, or here, that's where are we? Yeah, going for four levels, you have closer to 10 to the minus 5. For two levels, you have about 10 to the minus 3. So your error rate is increasing with the lower number of levels. And again, for phase shifting, it's the opposite. Your error rate increases with the higher number of levels. Okay, and again, we can look at our bandwidth efficiency, again, dependent on our encoding scheme, our modulation scheme, and whatever our value for R is. So here we get a number of values. We get the values for the bit error rate, and again, this was specifically for frequency shift keying, and so we look at that graph, and then correspondingly we get our bandwidth efficiency. And what we see is that for the lower bit error rate, the lower correspondingly the lower the bandwidth efficiency is. So we have to take more bandwidth to transmit at the same bit rate. Okay. So again, I'll just leave you to have a look at sort of at the same time what's happening to the signal to noise ratio for this sort of signal. Okay. So think about these problems. The bottom line is, again, there is this trade-off between the power at which you have to transmit, the error rate for the system, and then the bandwidth efficiency for the system. So the three of them interplay with each other. So that's it for what I'm going to say about sort of just, again, basic radio or basic communications systems. And so, again, our ideal goal is to accurately transmit a sequence of bits over a distance. We also want to do this efficiently. So we want to minimize the power we're using, we want to minimize the errors that we experience, and we want to minimize the amount of bandwidth we need to use for any given signal. Okay. And so the basic goals of designing these systems is to achieve those factors which are a bit at odds with each other. So next Thursday, we're going to look at sort of, again, the main distinguishing component of our system. Everything we said there could really apply to any system. We're going to now concentrate on the radio channel. What are the distinguishing characteristics of the radio channel that sort of differentiate it from a wireless system? And then following on from that, we'll see how these characteristics are used in the design of specifically cellular systems, but how they, again, interplay with the allocation and reuse of resources. So that's it for today. I will see you guys next Thursday.